This is the Integrate Intelligently podcast from Catatalk Software. A podcast about the people, programs, and processes that come together to make businesses successful. At Catatalk, we're a software integration company, but we believe this idea of intelligent integration goes much deeper than software.
Welcome back to the Integrate Intelligently podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Brickler. Today, another conversation with founder and CEO of Catatalk, Scott Brickler. Today's topic is very punny, topical, as it were. It's very topical in the sense of we're going to talk in tariffs. And so, Scott, you know, great to have you here. Interesting kind of topic as it's been in the news lately. So this would be good for us to talk about tariffs and manufacturing because they've been, you know, a big news stir.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it should be an interesting one because the like we were talking about a little bit off camera, it's like how much news do we watch and things like that. And, you know, I'm aware of the tariffs and stuff, but I don't dig deep into it. So I'm interested in learning more about it as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So a little different from you. I follow a consultant talks about like geopolitics and economic policies. And I always found that kind of thing interesting in my background, right? My background was more humanities when I first went to school. And so I was always not just politics, but history and why people do. So I wouldn't call myself an expert by any stretch, but I definitely follow that sort of thing. And of course, we know that the United States has implemented or threatened, not just threatened, but and implemented some tariffs against trading partners. So I think before we kind of get started, should talk a little. I mean, tariffs obviously aren't new; they're not just an American thing. Tariffs have been around for a long time, even American history, right? They used to be, you know, 150 years ago used to be a revenue source, government revenue source for imports. So, Scott, are you familiar with like what tariffs are and how they work, or is that something that you haven't really?
Absolutely. I was saying. I think we were talking about like it's not a lack of like understanding everything. It's more just I think it was just kind of a completely different conversation. It's like sometimes I always think about like the CNN stands for like constant negative news, you know, and just the idea of the news is always bad news and it's always so much worse than they make out because when it bleeds it leads, right? It's just so much more about scaring people than it is about the actual reality. So I'm not trying to ignore reality when I say that. It's more about not trying to get your mind being influenced by all the negativity around it. And that, you know, so understanding, yeah, I told him there's no lack of understanding. It's just whether or not like, you know, everything that's all the negativeness is, you know, especially around something you don't have 100% control over. So all you can do is control, you get the information, enough information to then decide how you're going to act and then no more.
No, that makes sense. Yeah. So it's not, I mean, you just prefer not, I think it's a lot of people, right? You prefer not to watch the news because as you said, right? The news and the media is in the market of scaring you, right? That's the whole thing, right? And so you get on the news and they do that and then doesn't help you, right? In terms of, doesn't help your mental health, doesn't help you make decisions. It just gets you all worked up. But so I guess let's talk about, you know, what are tariffs? You know, what does that mean for us as buyers, for our customers or manufacturers? What does that mean? What is a tariff and what does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of times I think it's to equalize out essentially different economies, right? So, and also it's usually, you know, my understanding is also is more of a protectionist act towards the given country. So if you're bringing goods in from overseas, you know, from other countries who have different economic structures, you can make the argument that those goods and services could be done in the United States. And therefore those jobs and those, you know, things like that are being eliminated because you're buying them, you know, from a different economic situation. So like a lot of manufacturing goods for many, many years are being done in China now. And, you know, and it's like, and the reason that is because the cost of living and the cost of labor in China is much lower because they control that or the way they do their economics is different. Right. So that's beneficial to the consumer, right? Because we can buy goods at a cheaper price but at the same time, you're also eliminating the job or the opportunity to make the same good in the United States, which then feeds our economic engine. So a way to offset that would be to tax it, essentially tax the good coming from the outside area to equalize the playing field as a way of doing that. Because like because what's happening is you're not in a truly competitive market when you have essentially different countries playing by different rules. And that happens a lot with these types of situations. Like China literally just sets the currency and decides, like my understanding, they just decide what it's going to be because it's how their country works, where we do it more off of like the Fed. And I guess we do the same thing in somewhat small respects, but they just don't work the same way. And the fact that they don't work the same way, we're all playing Monopoly, but everybody's playing with different rules. So by setting the tariff, you're saying, well, within the United States, we're going to equal the playing field by imposing a tax to make things more competitive.
Right. So that's a good point. So tariffs are something that's been around for hundreds of years, actually a very long time. And other countries, not just in the United States, but other countries have tariffs, right? Tariffs on, could be on to protect certain industries where you have a hard time competing that are smaller. So I know that like when I was in Italy and France may have this as well, where cheese is a big industry in those countries. It's important, right? I think even in Italy, the Parmesan cheese industry is like protected. It's actually what do they call that? Not a national treasure. It's one of those. It's a World Heritage site. Like it's a World Heritage thing as Parmesan cheese making. And I know the Italians will have tariffs and restrictions on other cheese imports to protect industries from imports that would be cheaper, right? Because you can make cheeses somewhere else where, like, for example, in the United States, we have a lot of land. And so we have a lot of cows and we have a lot of milk production. I think, you know, America produces a tremendous amount of milk and a lot of cheese. That's that whole, like, in Wisconsin, isn't it like a cheese warehouse or something? But, like, we produce a lot of cheese. And so, like, countries like France and Italy have protections, tariff protection, I'm pretty sure, against other cheesemakers because they want to protect those industries. They don't want someone else who's making, you know, Parmesan, right, or cheese outside of Italy to bring it in at a cheaper rate, right? Because they want to protect that industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or it's not the quality they want. I mean, you think about like, there's foods that aren't allowed to have certain types of dyes in them and stuff like that. So there's even that kind of where if you're producing for those different areas, so not only is there like, you want things to be produced in that area, there's actually the production itself is controlled because of different rules and different standards and things like that. So crossing borders is it's a very tricky thing, but it lets the world economy work in a lot of ways too. So, and that's, I mean, it gets very political because it's like, if you really think about it, it's funny that it's political because it's really macroeconomics, right? It's like what you believe about the macroeconomic landscape. Like, is free trade borders good or free trade borders bad? You know, and then like, how does this affect things macro and the macro? And like, nobody really knows. They have theories. And they know how things have worked in the past and that like, and there's essentially a tension between these things. It's not really one's right or one's wrong. It's that they're constantly in tension and you're kind of shifting it back and forth to equalize, to keep things stable. Right. And I remember taking macroeconomics in my MBA and I thought it was like, I have a friend who was an economist. He thought macro was completely useless. So he thought micro was actually really weird, but he thought macro was useless. But it's still, I thought it was fascinating, like the idea of these levers in the economy. You have like government spending, you have interest rates, you know, and these are the things that you can change to kind of the economy in different directions, you know, but that's how they do it. The idea is to keep things as stable as possible because people like stable.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Stable. Yes.
Stable and slowly growing up into the right. That's what people want.
That's right. That's exactly right.
You know?
So I guess tariffs do, as you said, what tariffs are doing and they can do when you make changes like that, which we've seen recently, that makes things a bit more unstable, a bit more unsure. So I think that, you know, the goal of this conversation really is around how do you find stability or how do you find some even footing, right? What do you do if you're manufacturing or you're in that industry, if you have unknowns, right? With like tariff changes are going to happen or you don't know what's going to happen. So I think that's the focus I'd like us to focus on currently. But at the core, it seems that like tariffs essentially change the cost of the good, right? Because if you're, let's say I'm importing something today, I'm a manufacturing company and I import something today and I buy that, whatever that is, right? A motor or something, and I buy it for $10 and now there's 100% tariff, I'm going to pay a $10 tax on that $10 good. So now when I put that motor is not $10 in the finished good that I'm going to sell to my customer, it's $20. So that's going to increase the cost. So at the end of the day, it's really just increasing the cost of production. Is that a fair assessment?
It can, yeah. It depends on, yeah, you're kind of, I think it has to do with how quickly it happens, right? The tariff goes in immediately, but the reaction to the tariff takes time. So therefore, it takes a crunch. It crunches the margins of those companies who are using outside goods immediately. Now they adjust, and that's, I think that's the, that it's basically is using, people are using tariffs as an economic lever. Just like I talked about changing government spending or changing interest rates, you can use tariffs as that lever. You'd say, well, I want to bring more of the supply chain into the United States or into the country that I'm, so I'm going to induce the tariff, increase the cost. It squeezes the margins of the industries, who then find alternative ways to get the goods, bring it back, usually by bringing it into onshore or other areas, and then influencing their behavior to change the dynamics of the economic equation. It just takes time. And during that time, there's uncertainty. And that's usually when that's what drives the economy kind of shrinking or whatever. Like, that's what drives the fear. So uncertainty drives the fear. The fear drives the economy. And that, so it's kind of I'm making it overly simplistic, but that's kind of how it drives. But you're trying to change behavior by imposing a tariff. You're like, well, the deal with these other countries isn't so great. It's actually hurting our country in the long term, even though it's making the prices cheaper. This is the theory, right? It's like, it's the prices are cheaper. It's good, stable, but it's slowly decaying our ability, this country, whatever country is imposing the tariff, it's decaying our country by not having the tariff. So we impose a tariff, we get a short-term pain, but a long-term benefit. That's the belief. That's the idea of it, right? Like, because go back even with Italy, right? With the Parmesan thing, we're not going to allow the Parmesan, because if we didn't, it would destroy the Parmesan industry, which is our heritage, you know? So long-term bad, but it probably would make Parmesan cheaper for the short term, you know? So, but there's not used to it being cheaper. So therefore it's okay.
Right. That's right. It's only when there's that change, that shock to the system, right? It's that shock, because you're not, that's not built in to your cost, right? Your cost of goods sold. You say, I'm going to sell this product, and I had been costing it, you know, I've been selling it for $10, but now like my cost is, you know, actually, you know, I made it for six and now I'm selling it for, you know, 10 and I'm going to make four, but now my cost isn't six anymore. It's eight or 850. Well, now my profit margin is lower. Well, now I can't, you know, I have a couple of choices. I think in this regard, I have, you know, what do I do here? How do I got to increase my prices or what? I can increase my prices or I take less profit, which no one likes that, right? Anybody with stock or investing in a company doesn't like that, or we have to cut costs somehow, right? So I guess conversation here is like, you know, a couple of choices. If your company affected by tariffs, is like you have a couple of choices, right? One is increase your prices. Another is to cut costs. And so maybe, you know, maybe we're best suited to talk about like that part, right? Because how do you cut costs?
You have to find, essentially what it's doing is you're imposing a change, right? Like everybody's used to playing, I always like the term Monopoly. It's like the game of Monopoly. Everybody's used to playing Monopoly a certain way. And then things get fat. Then the rules get a little fast and loose. And then we tighten the rules up. We impose a new rule, like a tariff. And then now everybody's got to figure out how to play Monopoly again. You know, and then like, you know, and what do I do to survive long enough to keep playing Monopoly? Because it's an infinite game. It doesn't ever end, right? So how do I keep doing that? And then it's painful. That's why everybody complains about it. And that's why the economy gets crazy and things like that. But so yeah, you can do it a couple different ways. It's hard to pass cost on, because if you increase cost, this demand will go down, and then things will kind of even out. You know, it'll be, you know, it can be good or bad, but if you can keep the prices where they are, but you can figure out how to do it cheaper, then you're probably going to have an advantage, because the consumers aren't going to notice, hopefully. You know, they won't be as affected by it, because it gets all the way down to the consumer. You know, that's where, like, maybe beyond my understanding, but it's like, you know, it's just going to drive the economy down, right? So in order to do it, so you're saying, okay, well, how do I keep the prices going down while the costs are going up? You have to figure out how to get more efficient. You have to figure out how to get more creative. And that's what some of these things are doing. The tariff is forcing you to kind of be, you know, to adapt to the new world. Yeah.
right? So you can adapt, like you said, you can adapt. Let's keep one thing constant, the prices. Let's say the prices are going to stay the same, but your cost of goods hasn't. So you have to figure out, if you're a manufacturing company, you have to figure out how to keep the cost. If the cost to buy something from a supplier goes up, you have to figure out how to keep the cost the same, because you don't want to pass. Let's say we're going to assume you don't want to pass it on to your customer. We're going to keep the cost the same. There's only a couple of options you have, right? Which is either you have to find cut costs other places to account for the increased cost over here. So if I have all these different places where I have costs, if I have this cost goes up, I have another cost somewhere else. I got to reduce that cost in order to make up for this, right? I got to get efficiencies or something else cheaper, or I have to change, or I can change where I buy this. All of those are options.
Or, you know, I've got to be able to create more output for the same input as well. You know, it's like, you don't necessarily have to cut. You can just say, you can just produce more than what you have. You know, that's another, like, I think it's because people have, obviously they have a negative connotation to cutting because, you know, a lot of times it's jobs, things like that, but the efficiency or the productivity numbers go up by introducing technology or tools or things that you wouldn't have, when the margins were higher, you would never address them. I think because people, like a lot of the, like that's what's interesting about these types of things is that until there's a stressor, a lot of times the creativity,
the status quo
just keeps going. There's actually a great book on this that for like operating a company called Profit First. And it essentially creates a similar type of kind of a micro scale is what you do is they realize that like most company owners don't look at their accounting numbers that much. They actually look at their bank accounts. So that's how most people like run their personal finances. Like, do I have enough money in the bank? Yep, I'm good. And then what they do is kind of a, you know, long story short, what you do end up doing is you use different accounts and you move money around. So you give yourself a perception. So you say, well, I'm actually going to pre-allocate profit. I'm going to pre-allocate these expenses. I'm going to put them in these different bank accounts. It's very similar to like the envelope system. If you ever use those, like the envelope system we use, like, and you say, I'm going to put these money in this. And therefore, when I look at my account, it looks low because I've already pre-allocated the money in there. So you don't get this false sense of like, oh, there's all this money here. I'm fine. And then you realize, oh, and this big expense, all that stuff. And then you realize you had no money at the end. You actually pre-allocate all those things into different accounts. And when you look at your bank account, you go, oh, I don't have any money. I need to act. I need to get creative. I need to do something different. And you drive it up, and then you've already reserved the profit. You've already reserved the expense money out. And it's just psychological. It does the same thing. So like the same thing's happening kind of with the tariff, right? You say, I'm imposing you're kind of fat and happy and you're doing the things the way you're doing them. We're going to impose this stressor to make you more efficient or to change your behavior, you know, to do something different. And, you know, people, it's painful. it doesn't feel just like when you lift weights the day you have like, you know, the 2 days later, you can barely walk, but your legs are getting stronger or whatever it is. Right. It's the same kind of stressor.
Yeah. That's a good point. It's stressing you out. So by stressing you means it pushes you to look for better ways to deliver, better ways to do what you're doing, right? To fix any kind of broken processes, find better suppliers. Maybe even that creates economic opportunity for someone in the U.S. to start a business, right? To create a manufacturing company or to make goods locally or to nearshore or whatever, deliver for customers, for the manufacturing companies, what they need. So what it does is, as you said, it forces some kind of change to happen. It just ends up being painful because no one likes to change, right? That's a well-known fact.
And well, it's really painful when it's the biggest economy in the world doing it. That's the other thing. It's like, not to get like, we don't get political on the call, but it's like, think about it. It's like there's tariffs being happening. We named a bunch of them with other countries. It's just that when the biggest economy in the world imposes them, everybody feels it. The entire world feels it. And traditionally the United States has been more, pro open borders, right? That's like, it's very business oriented, right? At least it's my understanding of it. I'm not saying it's 100% true, but it tends to be more of like business friendly, you know, let's go to where the most efficient things are, cost low, things like that. And then now that's kind of being, you know, a little bit, that dynamic's changing a little bit, but it's the problem is that the scale, you know, of that, it really causes a lot of disruption worldwide because so much of the economy, I noticed that when I've traveled in the past, you go to certain countries and they're very much paying attention to what the United States is doing because there's so much economy driven from those, from this country, you know, for the world economy. And so it's like, we're not, like, these things are not necessarily things that other countries don't do. It's just something, it's just when the US does it, it just is so much more disruptive.
And it's different from how we've typically operated.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, people, we haven't had tariffs. I mean, I know that we have in more recent years, right? We have had more in recent years, tariffs against other countries, tariffs against China, even in 2018 and 2019, and restrictions. So we've had these in place. We've had tariffs in the past, but when you have such a big change in them, like you said, that, and that being the economy as big as the United States is, it has a ripple effect throughout everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, totally. And just get back to your, like, the idea of, like, what do you do to react to that? Like, that's so just, I think it's the same, you know, the same thing you do when there's an economic shift or there's like a downturn or an upturn. Like, you know, the downturn, you know, like, obviously this is causing some of the, you know, downturns because people are uncertain, and then there's uncertainty, there's a downturn, but it's also an opportunity because it's an opportunity to get stronger. It's an opportunity to, like, it's just like being, you're introducing stress into the system and the companies that will come stronger in order to, and they'll come out on the other side of it even better than they were, but they have to readjust to the new thing. So one of them would be like, you know, shameless plug on our part, like you could get more efficient with your engineering process, you know, that to do that. You don't, you know, if you're doing those things manually, you can get more output by automating them with software because you buy the software at a fixed cost, and it's able to do, you know, it's able to leverage and do things that you used to have to do manually. And then now you can get more output with your given same cost input. And that's a way to offset the cost of the tariff or offset the change in the economy or whatever it is. So those are all things, like we're kind of alluding to, is that the stress makes you be more creative. It makes you act. And then you start finding solutions to your problems. And there's sometimes the solutions are technology. There's just different ways of doing things. And you're catching, and it's making you look at all of those things that are in the past have been inefficient and really reevaluate.
Yeah. So I was thinking, like, there was like just at least two ways I was thinking of that, like a manufacturing company. If I was in a manufacturing company, based upon my experience working with engineering and manufacturing, there's kind of two areas that you could look at for efficiencies. One would be in design, right? By saying, well, what kind of material are you using, or where are you getting that part from? Or do you have to have that type of part? Do you have to have that type of part from this vendor, vendor or supplier? So one way is to look at it and go, am I designed from an engineering standpoint? Do I need this exact part, right? This exact purchase part that we get from this supplier? Yeah, I have to have that one. Well, you could say, well, are there other suppliers I could get that from, that equally from? Or you could say, how could I achieve this same thing with a different type of part? From an engineering perspective, I think we talked about this in supply chain. We talked about resiliency or anti-fragility, where you have, what if I could design something and have alternates? And those alternates could have alternate suppliers. And if I could get efficiencies and the sort of my handoff from engineering to manufacturing, and I could design a part with several different options, I could manage it in my ERP quickly, and I could have multiple vendors, I can make those adjustments much more quickly, because now if I'm making a product, I may have two or three alternatives with two or three different vendors or suppliers I could get to. I might have my favorites, or I really prefer this part over that part because of, you know, personal preference or whatever that may be, right? But that, over time, that may not be, those assumptions or those beliefs may not be true. And from an engineering perspective, you can say, oh, well, you know, I could try to design this in a new way. And that design, that stressor can, as you said, make you more creative. I could find a better way to design this part or design this machine, because now I had a constraint put on me. And we all know that, like, constraints is what makes you come up with the best solution.
Yeah. I mean, constraints create creativity. You know, that's the, you know, it really drives that. And I think the interesting thing is that the constraints change a lot. Right. So it's like, here we are, you know, we get used to certain constraints, and then humans are such pattern recognition creatures. Right. And then what happens is the patterns get messed up, and then we don't know and then we don't know what to do. And then we have to, then once we learn the pattern again, then we get comfortable and then we run for a while. It's just because, like, I mean, I think I say this a lot during our internal meetings. It's like everything in our evolution wants us to be lazy, like conserve energy, right? It's like everything in our makeup wants that to happen, right? It's because thinking and all of that is extremely expensive, you know, from a biological standpoint, right? And so what we do is we're pattern recognition machines is what we are. So we just, we try to find the pattern. We short circuit in our brains. So we have to use less energy so we can act without thinking. And then we're always wanting to get back to that. And, but we're really good at figuring out, but like when the patterns shift, we have pain because we have to do something. We have to expel more energy to figure out what's going on. And then we figure out the next pattern, but we're really, and that's when our brain turns on and we become the most creative is when we're trying to figure out the, like how to deal with a new pattern. You know, and that's, and then, so a lot of these acts and everything, you really think about like their core thing is just shifting the patterns and your ability, you know, I think I saw this from Tony Robbins the other day. He goes, your ability to like recognize patterns is a huge, it's like a super skill, especially in times like these, right? It's like, what's going on here? Oh, that's what's going on. So therefore, if I could see that pattern, I could predict that this other thing's going to happen. And then therefore I could act on that. And then one of the things that he talked about was that all of these things that are happening have happened many times before. They're just not within our lifetime. So therefore, we haven't seen the pattern like personally, but the pattern of tariffs being introduced or the pattern of this generation coming doing this, all of that's happened over and over and over again throughout history. We just don't remember it because we weren't alive. And so therefore, everything feels novel to us, but that's not really what's happening. You know, and there's like, go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, that's where, you know, you get into the history of like, you know, what was it like? What were things like when we had those, right? That's some of that argument, right? Like some of the argument is like we had higher tariffs, different points in history. And some of the arguments I've heard is like, you know, prior to recent times, we had more tariffs here in the United States, for example. Now, I'm not saying I subscribe to this argument or whatever, but we had more tariffs and had more manufacturing and America was stronger. And now it's like, well, we reduced those tariffs and we had free open trade. The argument is that, as you said, things got worse here, right? Manufacturing went overseas, went to, you know, different countries, and then we started to import everything. And then we lost a lot of those, you know, those manufacturing jobs, which hurt us in the long run, but not in the short run. Or in the long run, it's hurting us, but in the medium run, like we're getting cheaper products.
Yeah, it's absolutely, it's true. It's like, I mean, you think about it, like over the long run, you know, the only way that it makes sense to manufacture another country and then import it is if the natural resources and that they have natural resources that we don't have, or if there's some kind of economic reason to do it, right? But assume everybody made the same amount of money and everybody was in the same wages and everybody played by the same rules. It was a world government, right? You would just make things close to where you needed them because the highest cost would be the transportation cost.
That's right. It would be. Yeah.
So therefore you would try to do things as locally as possible other than that was actually manufactured. Now digital, like, you know, you talk about like remote work or stuff like that, it would still probably be remote because then you would just be a talent acquisition. Like who has the best talent? Because everybody makes the same money, there would be no arbitrage on the cost of living anymore. It would just be on where's the best talent and, you know, and where could I get it? And if there was an advantage over having a person locally versus having the remote, then you'd have more remote, you'd have more local because of that. So it just depends, like all the names. The problem is that not all countries have the same cost of living. Countries have the same governments. Not all countries operate under the same rules. And not all countries have all the same natural resources. In a country like the United States, which actually has most of all the natural resources it needs, and all of this is so big, it has all that stuff, it could technically be a self-sustaining thing. The reason it hasn't been is because of the arbitrage of the different economies and cost of living. That's how it does it. That's how we're able to keep things, you know, relatively inexpensive, is because we're taking advantage of the arbitrage of cost of labor and things like that in other countries to then lower the cost to us, even though our wages are going up. And that's one of the, and so the problem is that the argument is that you are decaying the value of this country at the expense of having cheap products, you know? And I think that's the thing you're trying, I guess, they're trying to protect against, I suppose.
Yes. Right. Now that makes sense. So getting into like, if you're a manufacturing company, we talked about like, what can you do, right? Like your price of goods are going up, your price of raw materials, your price of goods are going up. You know, if you're running a manufacturing company, Scott, what what do you tell your workers? What do you tell them, right? What's the goal? What's the strategy for getting through the tariffs and the changes? You say, hey, team, tariffs happened, big shock, right? Big shock to the system. Now what, right? Now what do we do, right? You're the leader. You had to tell them what to do and all parts of the business. What's that message?
Yeah, I think it's really about like, it's not a, like, first thing would be is like, all the ideas aren't going to come from the leader. They're just going to come, the leader's going to might give a vision. And then, but it's going to, the vision will be to, that we have to figure out how to do more with less. And we have to figure out how to keep our, because we can't pass the cost onto the customer, you know, that like the market will only tolerate so much. And we have to figure out how to get more efficient and more and produce more with less. And then, so we need to look at what we do and how we do it. And where can we get that efficiency back that we've lost, that we, where have things gotten fat? You know, and the great analogy I heard today, where can we cut the fat without nicking the muscle? And that's how, that would be the vision you'd have to give, you know, like, how do we do that? And then how do we, you know, how do we get creative? How do we do these things? You know, what tools, what technologies, what process changes, what type of things do we have to do? Can we do to change the value equation or change the business model to where we go back to the same profitability and the same kind of operating that we did before?
Right. So it's about really looking at your, I think what you're saying, if I'm going to boil it down to my understanding, is you have, if you're a leader, you're telling the team, okay, we had to do more with less, which means we had to improve, we had to do departmental changes to increase our productivity, which then reduces our cost, right? And make changes that allow us to maintain the profitability while at the same time not changing the cost of the end consumer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's not as simple as, I know I've watched plenty of people, and again, this is not designed to be politics, but you have different sides of the equation, right? Some people say, oh, you increase the tariff, it's just, people are just going to raise the prices. That's all they're going to do is raise the prices. And that is one strategy, right? One strategy, a simple strategy is to say, I got to pay a 50% tariff, I'm going to raise your price by 50%. Right. It may or may not be. It could, to your point, the leader dictates what's going to happen. The leader may say, no, we're not going to raise 50%. Maybe we'll raise 10%. Maybe we won't. But the other percentages, we're going to figure out how we're going to do this more efficiently.
Well, I mean, that's a kind of a somewhat of a naive statement to say that the prices will go up. Like, in order for that to happen, you'd have to have collusion of all the people who make that thing. Right. You have to have like essentially a cartel. Right. You'd say like we have like an oil, things like that. Like, they all have to agree. Like, say there was like three CEOs that make the same thing, right? All the three companies make the same thing, and three CEOs go, two of them goes, oh, we're going to raise prices because we just can't do anything with it. And the third one goes, here's the opportunity. If I figure out how to make it for less, I could cut all these other guys out and take it all for myself. That's competition. That's what makes capitalism work, because they won't collude and they won't decide to raise the prices together. And that actually makes everything better. But it's not without pain. So it's the decision you make on that is like, you're trying to be competitive is like, here's an opportunity where like I have all these competitors. And if I figure out how to deal with the situation faster, I'm actually can take advantage of an arbitrage in the market and maybe do even better. But it's going to force me to think harder to do it. And the fact that people are willing to do that is what creates the competition. So the only way that all the prices would just rise is if everybody colluded to decide to make the prices rise, which is against the law, actually.
Yeah. So at this time, people have the leadership to make a decision, right? As a leader, you just make a decision to say, hey, we're not going to raise prices, or we're going to only raise them a small amount, and we're going to figure out how to handle the rest through efficiencies, through better productivity, through better pricing with our suppliers, through standardization on parts or standardizations on materials. So Scott, if your manufacturing company, you'd pass down to your manufacturing team and to your engineering team those initiatives. And if you're in engineering, right, I think I talked about this a little bit, you might say, okay, from an engineering standpoint, I might look at cheaper ways to make this part, right? I might look at more efficient ways to do this assembly, right? It's ways in which to do it better and cheaper. If I'm in manufacturing, or I might say, oh well, you know, what's the process of making this? How do I make that cheaper? Right, as terms of could be through the material types you use. It could be through the machines that you use. It could be through how the process works. Right, what's all involved with that?
Oh yeah, I mean, it's like you can almost, if you think about it, you know, you start connecting the dots, you can start seeing even industries that are going to thrive because of tariffs. You know, like people don't realize that, because like, it's like at every end of like every kind of disruption, there's somebody who does really, really well. And there's somebody who does, who also gets affected. Right. So like, let's do a thought experiment on that real quick. Like, what would be an industry that you think would actually rise because of tariffs?
That's a good question. I haven't really thought about it. I don't know. I'm not sure what, I guess I watched somebody was saying that, like, I think someone said, if I were in America and I had manufacturing capacity, or I was like a contract manufacturer, or if I had the ability to start up a manufacturing plant, that's what I'd get into. I would get into kind of contract manufacturing and just start making parts right here, right away, right? Start making them right away for people and just take, you know, be a contract manufacturer for here locally to make whatever it is you need. Just give me your drawings and I'm going to make them.
But the problem is, now take that one second order benefit. Well, the problem, why weren't we doing that the whole time? Because because labor and everything's expensive here. So what would have to happen in order to make the tariffs to make it more equalized, right? But still the price, all you did was get equal to the tariff. So the price still went up, but you don't want the price to go up. So the question becomes, how do I do the manufacturing in the United States at the price levels that it used to be done in China? How do I do that?
Yeah, you have to be more efficient. I mean, there's just no more efficient.
You have to use technology.
Yeah, you have to.
Right? So you have to get better software, better thing. What's the biggest thing coming on the horizon for labor?
Oh, certainly AI is going to play a big role, right? Because
robotics.
Yeah, robotics too. Good. Well, AI and robotics together, right? Because robotics have AI with them. Yeah, that's a good point.
So you're going to see, like, so you think about the next, so I got to bring the manufacturing into the United States, and how can I do manufacturing in the United States at the cost that it used to be in China with, and I don't have to raise it all the way down. I have to make it just the cost of what it would be plus the shipping costs from China. So if I could get it to the cost of what it is to make in China and not have to pay the shipping, it's even better than it was before. But it isn't necessarily going to create jobs here. Maybe it creates high level jobs, people who figure out how to make robots. You see that. So anybody who's making robots is going to could probably do really, really well.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. And then people politically goes, well, that's interesting. Elon's making robots.
Sure.
You see, right. I mean, that's where the politics come in. But you see how that works, right? But that's the drive that change, right? That's an industry that's going to probably boom. Just like the PPE, the protective equipment, boomed during COVID.
During COVID, yeah.
Yeah, and that's seeing the surge, seeing the wave, right? You're seeing the wave coming, like it's surfing, and you know it's coming. You just got to be there to catch it. So you're like, oh, you know, well, who's, you know, creating a manufacturing company that can compete in this new, like, who actually can be as inexpensive and operate just as efficiently as a company in China without the shipping cost is a huge opportunity.
Yeah, that is, yeah. Not an easy thing to do, but yes.
Not easy at all. All right.
So Scott, I think we're running out of time. So I think one of the things we wanted to talk about was good about tariffs, a lot of ideas about, you know, what we might happen, ideas for manufacturing companies. I think it's really back to the fundamentals, because in the long term, to your point, Scott, it could change where manufacturing happens. It can change, to your point, help robots. But in the short term, right, companies really need to focus, manufacturing companies need to focus on doing things more efficiently, finding those cracks and gaps in their processes, getting more resilient and creative about solving those problems. And to your point, it's hard, right? It's hard to do that because it takes a lot of thought, right? And you said we're pattern recognition machines. And so we're so used to those patterns. Now we have to change it, and that causes a bit of stressor. But at the end of the day, you have to go back to the fundamentals, which is, how do I get more efficient and focus on repeatable processes, automate where I can, and become more efficient.
Yep. Yeah. And like technology, I mean, we're at a great place. That's literally the business what we're in. We're into making engineering and manufacturing more efficient. So we're, I think we're in a great place. I think it's, no matter where you are, it doesn't have to just be an American company, but anywhere where you have that, as we're competing on a world stage, where you need to figure out how to get, how to get through your operations and the data transfers and all that stuff needs to happen. We are a great tool for that to help with that, to help in that problem, to get in order to drive more productivity through the manufacturing process.
It's also going to be not just for what we do, but for other companies, right? Or not other companies, but other processes, right? For your ERP or your PLM or for your CAD or for your designs or even for your shop floor, right? What lasers you have or what software for nesting or any of those types of things can help gain efficiencies. So I would expect companies to really look at what they're doing and figure out ways in which they, to your point, can do more with less.
Mm-hmm. Cut the fat without nicking the muscle,
Yeah. Well, Scott, that's a good conversation. I'm glad we didn't get too political, but we did talk about, tariffs and the different ideas around, how people see tariffs and really focus on what can manufacturing companies do and how do we think about it to be more resilient in the future. So Scott, that's another good conversation. Anything else to say before we wrap up?
No, I think that was a good one. It was definitely thought-provoking. I mean, where things are going and kind of looking at it from a different lens. Not that these things, I mean, we're all feeling the pinch of it right now. The economy is not doing what we want it to do, in this particular moment, but we know that it's a bigger thing. And sometimes there's always, in everything that like seems bad, there's also areas that are doing well. You have to kind of, what you focus on matters, and if you focus on just the negative part of it, then you're only going to see the negative. You can also see, the opposite side too. So I just want everybody to keep it, it's good to know that these things are happening, but don't get caught up with them and just don't fall down the spiral of negativity and just believe the world's ending, because this has happened before and it will happen again,
So my takeaway was I'm going to take any extra cash I have and invest it in robotics.
Might not a bad thing to be. They say it's going to be the biggest, the most successful product in human history.
I don't doubt that. If I can get a robot to do the chores at home and clean them after my kids, I'm all for that.
I know it.
For that.
My wife needs one to clean up after me. So.
No, I was looking forward to the day that we have robotics who can do those things at home. I know I heard, and this is the last thing about robotics, but I've listened to some podcasts and I've heard that there could be, what is it, like humanoid robots, like some billions and billions of humanoid robots in the next, I don't even know how next, if that's 10 years, 30 years, 50 years, I'm not sure, but just a huge number of humanoid robots that are working for us and those doing tasks for us, even at home and at work. And
it's crazy. Yeah. I mean, they're saying the cost could get down to like 20 grand.
Yeah, I've heard that same thing. Basically, like the price of a car, you could have a robot in your home doing chores for you.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's more than that, right? I'm selfish. I just want someone to clean my house. But no, that's crazy. But yeah, to your point, maybe robotics is the next thing. I don't know.
Yeah, could be. Yeah, never know.
Well, thanks everybody for listening, Scott. Good conversation. That wraps us up for this time. So feel free to subscribe to our podcast, the Integrate Intelligently podcast. You can get that on YouTube or wherever your podcasts are delivered. You also get to our website at cadtalk.com if you want to learn more about automating your engineering to manufacturing handoff. And look forward to the next conversation, Scott.
Thanks. Sounds good.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Integrate Intelligently podcast from CadTalk Software. Don't forget to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss future episodes. Video versions of the podcast will be available on CadTalk's YouTube page, linked in the show notes. The Integrate Intelligently podcast is hosted by CadTalk CEO Scott Brickler and CRO Jeff Brickler. Our producer is myself, marketing manager John Thomas. If you have a story you want to share on the podcast or you want to partner with us, let us know. Email marketing@cadtalk.com and be sure to mention podcast in the subject line.